With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with the Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the City of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Yes, he's in the intensive care ward at Our Lady of the Worthless Miracle.
Welcome, everyone, to your newly scheduled on a different night Prospects Power Hour with Ben and Robbie.
Yeah.
And, Robbie, we are currently right now outside my window getting lots of lightning and loud thunder.
Oh.
I don't know if that's going to come through on the mic, but what it may do is it may make it so you get to do a solo show at some point here, which would not be fun. But, we'll hope that the weather holds off and we can both have a good chat. So,
yeah, I was having jumpy internet last week and I felt like I was chopping all over the place. I've restarted this computer umpteen times. Hopefully it is smooth sailing tonight. And yeah, Ben, you stay with us the whole time. So, well, yeah. let's discuss the things we want to discuss with MLB News. Our main target for tonight is going to be guys that you would like to look for because they are on the way up in your dynasty builds. And then also Ben has thrown in some guys who have missed time that are somewhat forgotten, which we mentioned pre-draft, that there are those guys who are going to go down all the lists because the new names are going to go up, but they're missing time or have missed time, and that's why they're not on the list that you had seen before. And then Ben has found probably the best example of why not to invest in A, catchers, and B, any prospect realistically who doesn't have a path within that organization. Don't go too whole hog on them. And it is, of course, we'll get to it, Ben. We'll get to it. So, yeah. But anyway, so we had some MLB debuts, Ben. Do you want to tell everybody who is now a big leaguer?
Yes, on your Colorado Rockies, Warming Bernabeu, which is got to be one of the best names in baseball right there, made his debut this week. For those who are wondering, he's going to get a lot of third base time. This is after they traded Ryan McMahon. So we do have, you know, he's going to get time at third base. Defensively, I don't think there's going to be any issues. This is a guy, Robbie, he hits the ball 110 plus, but he also has he had the second lowest hard hit rate in AAA. So when he hits it really hard, but he hits it really hard, but he doesn't hit it hard very often. And so he does have really good gap power. That's probably going to play fairly well in that park with the big outfield there. But probably I would say this is at most, this is a corner infield filler for you. Probably not a starting third baseman type, unless you just really hit the skids on your injury issues this year or something. But,
right.
Probably he not a major one to worry about.
He is an excellent placeholder and allows, Kyle Karros at AAA to get regular third base at bats. And of course, you can win the spot now, rest of year and into next year. But we've also seen other players with major issues in the NL West, specifically thinking of James Outman, who was able to sustain success for a brief period of time. And then once figured out, that was the end of that. And Outman has just gone into AAA quad A player status. Sorry, not triple A player status. But not that I'm saying that that's what's happening here to Warming, but Kyle Karros is my preferred pick with Merakis. Yep. So that's what I'm thinking.
There's an opportunity. That's probably coming soon enough.
Yeah.
But for right now, Bernabéu's getting the at-bats, and so someone to pay attention to at least. Carlos Cortez came up. He's been really kind of playing as a backup for the A's. Probably not something you really need to worry about. But Troy Melton is a guy I've really always liked with Detroit as a back-end, like, number four type of starter. The type of guy who pitches 180 innings for you, and then you don't start him in the playoffs, that type of a pitcher.
Yeah. League pitcher for fantasy. That's exactly what really, Troy Melton is. You could put him in he'd be like 8 to 12 points per game, chugs along in the season for you, helps you, doesn't hurt you. But absolutely, you're not making an aggressive fantasy trade for him thinking, lock that in, you know, thank goodness.
Yeah. And with some injuries and trade stuff, we might get to see now Troy Melton stick in that rotation for a couple turns. So that's kind of a positive thing, I guess. I don't know what, you know, but the good thing is it should be at the number five spot, you know, in the rotation. He should be the fifth guy in the rotation in that. And finally, Carson Wisenhunt made his debut for the Giants. He's okay. I don't know. I'm not like.
Yeah, I get you.
I think the bloom is off the rose there.
Yeah, but, the silent gaps you had there are appropriate because this is a once upon a time guy who that trajectory fell off, and now he looks like what I think initially was being said of him, which is back end of the rotation type talent, but. We'll see, right? Like, you know, she's watching Kyle Harrison, you know, with Boston. The evolution of youth can go all over the place here. So hopefully up with the Major League coaching staff, they can do their best with him to maximize him. But we will see. We have also seen San Francisco playing pitchers and then sending them down into a purgatory of sorts at AAA where they're just not back. So we'll see. But yeah, we did have a question here from Chad talking about Freeland. Is he up more as a showcase than as a need? Valid question. Well, Ben?
I mean, what if they've been playing Kim? Because that's really who he's replacing on the roster. And they have resisted the urge a couple of times when they needed a backup infielder to bring him up this year. So, I mean, Kim had been getting regular starts. I mean, he's not been the everyday every time out starter.
Yeah, he's sparse.
Yeah. But when he played, in general, I was trying to up here his game log because recently anyway, I mean, right away, yeah, he was really sparse. But I thought recently, I'm pulling up game logs here, which is really entertaining television. All right. Oh, wait, we're not on television.
So I was looking.
He has you know been what, getting. Though,
Hold on. To your point, we're not on television. We're podcasters, sure. But as someone mentioned to me today, because we go live on YouTube, we're streamers. All right.
Yeah.
We're streamers. So, you know, we're not podcasters as the old adage is. We are streamers. Thank you very much. But Kim, I wanted to say, of course, he's hurt now. But prior to the injury, he had 16 at bats last week and 10 at bats the week before. That's why I'm calling sparse. In all dynasty formats, he's available basically because he's not getting to play enough.
So 4 out of 5 games that he would play, I'm going back here over the last month, he started out most of his games he was coming in and then finishing out the game, and there was a lot of gap for the team games in between the games that he appeared in. Not so much late in July here. And he has ended up, like I said, about 4 of every 5 games he was starting that he appeared in. So, I mean, he's been starting when he's been on the field, and I think that's going to probably be Freeland's role, is starting when he's up or when he's on the field. But right now, honestly, the Dodgers are just in enough of a funk that I think if Freeland comes up and he hits, you know, he comes out of the gate hitting fairly well, and especially if he's making some solid defensive plays and hitting as well, they're not taking him off the field.
Yes,
they need that badly right now. Yep. They're just not getting that kind of performance from anyone.
And that's happened with veterans before with the Dodgers, mm-hmm. where they come in and they're rolling through it. And then this year they've turned through quite a few. And I mean, we've got a trade deadline, which we're not focusing on tonight. We'll mention some deals that have happened as it implicates other things we're discussing. But next week we'll do the full wrap up and what all that means mm-hmm. for everybody. And within that, the Dodgers could be quite active because they might decide that the price is right to do this, that, and the other. So, yeah, we'll see.
So, promotions we had this week, a few decent names to really pay attention to. The Dodgers did a bunch of moving in their A-ball promotions, so there's some very interesting names that moved at that level.
Maui Ahuna, right there, the Great Lakes Loons with the rally camel. Yeah,
there you go. Maui Ahuna is up to high A. He's had a little bit of injury stuff since he got this year, as he's kind of coming in his first full year after being drafted last year. Jake Bennett is back. I don't know if you remember Jake Bennett, Oklahoma lefty, University of Oklahoma lefty that Washington drafted, kind of a really solid college pitcher. Most folks thought he would be a top two rounds pitcher, and has been out with Tommy John. And so he's back. He's back up to Double A now. So that's a good sign. Henry Bolt, one of my favorite names in Major League or in Minor League Baseball right now, is in Triple A, moved up to Double A. Jacob Gonzalez, former College World Series hero with the Chicago White Sox, is now up to Triple A. And here's your Dodger trio that at least that I mm-hmm. wrote down. There's more that were involved, but Chase Harlan, third baseman, has moved up to single A with Emil Morales, who's a shortstop
that everybody likes at single A.
Everyone loves Emil Morales. Another guy everyone seems to like, Eduardo Quintero, is up to high A now, which I think will be probably where he finishes the year. And then our boy Tyler Renz with Milwaukee is finally out of complex ball and up to single A. And Christian Robinson, remember him before he mm-hmm. got into lots of big trouble around COVID and all that? He is now up to triple A. And we talked about the Washington basketball pitching team, Yoel Tejeda, who's a fun 6'8" right-hander, got his promotion up to high A. So, but we do have unfortunate news in the minor leagues. And specifically one of Tejeda's organization mates.
One of the forwards on that Washington team.
Because he is a little shorter. I mean, he's only 6'5", 6'6". So, you know, he's not one of the guys that they can put down on the post. But Travis Sakura, it was announced, is going to have Tommy John. The same day, Tekoa Robey was announced that he's going to have Tommy John. Sad day. I mean, both of those guys. You'd love to see. Tekoa Robey has really made himself into a solid pitching prospect this year, and I think he did it really under the radar. A lot of folks kind of saw his struggles last year and kind of put him off. But, man, Sakura is – I mean, you could have a legit argument that Sakura – could have been discussed as a top pitching prospect in the game, as the top pitching prospect in the game before this injury. And God, that stinks.
I wouldn't say top because Mr. Tommy White of Miami had 14. He punched 14 tickets in his last start in Double A. He's looking better and better. And in the league I traded him away in, I'm upset, but in the leagues in which I have kept him, every single trade offer somehow seems to include him to get it over the top. And Socorro is a guy that I was looking at all year long trying to get him, and understandably so. The hype is ahead of the results for him at a high level at the moment, but this is going to be an excellent cooling off period for his prospect capital, because in 1 year, he will not be back throwing on a program to headed to the fall league unless they would like him to be skipping ahead and doing something like winter ball or going to Australia. I can't imagine they're going to do that because he's a high school drafted guy. They're going to take this one slow. So there'll be an opportunity in the 2026 offseason to get him before any new stats get accumulated. So we're just going to put a pin in that and circle on back to it. So, but Ben, you wanted to do a prospect spotlight. And my friend,
a negative spotlight.
Yeah. Unfortunate. So however we'd like to say it.
If you've listened to us for very long at all, you understand that, Robbie is not a fan of catchers in fantasy in general, but especially not a fan of prospect catchers.
Investing in them. That's the problem. There's only so many spots. Yeah. I don't want to use many on catchers. Yes.
So this week, you got to see Diego Cartaya sign a minor league deal with the Giants. In 2023, Diego Cartaya was the number 23 prospect going into the season on Pipeline's list.
All of baseball, not just within the organization. All of the baseballs.
Now, this is to kind of bring back something Robbie said earlier. At that time, I believe, if I remember right, that's not even true. Coming into 23, he was number 14 on Pipeline's list.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Top 20 consensus. All three major lists out there that go into Baseball Reference, 18, 14, and 19. So a top 20 guy across the board and just fell off hard once he got to high or into the upper minors. But he was also, I think, at the time, the third catching prospect in the organization for the Dodgers. There was, I think, Lorenzo and Rushing and him.
Yeah, he, I think, was the early favorite. Cartaya was the early favorite, and the other guys caught and surpassed him. Yeah.
So that's just, but it's a really good, just because a guy looks really nice in the low-level minors, especially as a catcher, understand that he has to be able to keep hitting once he gets up to the upper minors, and he will also have the responsibility of catching upper-level pitchers who have a lot better stuff than, I mean, about half the time, at least, in A-ball, you're putting down a number one. You know, you're getting a fastball pretty darned off.
And you just have to catch it. You just have to catch the thing. That's the hard part in A-ball.
So, no, it caught my attention. But then this last offseason, the Dodgers chose to remove him from their 40-man this spring, or this winter, and the Twins claimed him. He went to AAA with St. Paul in the Twins organization and hit 085 with 40 strikeouts in 69 plate appearances.
My goodness.
That is hard to do if you're trying to strike out 40 times in 16. I mean, I'm not going to say I would get a hit in 29 of 69 plate appearances, but I could sure as hell tell you, I would find a way to at least put some wood on ball more than 40 times, more than two-thirds of the time. And not to mention the reports you got were that the defense was atrocious. And I will say the Twins AAA rotation has a knuckleballer, has a guy who uses a splinker, all kinds of goofy pitches. So, yes, there is some challenge there, but even then, it's not good to hear those sort of comments. And so he got released. The Giants signed him as a minor league on a minor league contract, and we have spent way too much time already on Diego Cartaya. But he is a really good reminder that,
caution. I mean,
the old thing is out there of the tin stap. You know, there is no such thing as a pitching prospect. I think catching prospects are very much the same, and especially when you're in an organization where there are ample opportunity for guys to take your spot.
Yeah, so. And also when you get to the top in those organizations, one of the most frustrating things is that the organization itself will not typically let a rookie type catcher develop. Mm-hmm. They are far more likely to go and get your Danny Jansen and fill it in. And then you go get your, what is it? Liam Hicks, whoever it was that Tampa Bay went and got right Nick after Fortes. Instead of possible yeah. Fortes. Thank you. Instead of possibly promoting another. And that's just what's up. So
we'll talk about this more, but in my opinion, Marlins did really freaking well there. But anyway, we'll get back to that another time. Marlins, if they continue doing as well as they've done so far in the deadline, they're going to have two really good deadlines in a row, and they're mm-hmm. already in a position where that team, they're in third place this year. I mean, and a legit third place. They're a challenge for the Mets and for the Phillies to get out. Not the Braves, because the Braves are throwing freaking Eric Fetty now. And he's given up 4 runs in 3 innings, so you know that that's going really well. But
better than 5, right, Ben? It's better than let's take a positive turn. It's not 5 yet.
Okay.
So. And so when people are scraping the bottom of the barrel, Ben, what do they want to do? They want to let Jesus take the wheel.
Amen. There we go. Good transition.
Yeah. So let's move into that. I've got a wrap up. I'm going to unfortunately have to kill a Miami starter. In the Jesus Take the Wheel that I was really thinking good things of, and that's Jansen Junk, who got blown up before I picked him up, and I thought that was a bad turn, but it turns out no sir. So 5 innings in his last start, which dates us back to July 26th, or I shouldn't say dates us back, but puts it back to July 26th. The July 20th start was also a blow up, 1K over 5, and the loss last on the 26th was a win in 5 innings with 5 Ks. So I'm calling it dead because the first one was so bad, but we will still play out this final start of his and then officially say that that one wasn't ideal. But if you get a win out of a waiver wire type guy, and he's still only 17% rostered right now, and I do remember specifically saying, I'm not sure where he's going to fall within that post All-Star break. So, okay there. But moving on to Brad Lord with Washington, who in the last
week... This has been interesting.
Yeah, 9 innings pitched, only 3 Ks, which obviously we want more. No wins, no losses, call that a draw, but a 1.93 ERA. He has been so much better since he's went into the bullpen and now coming out. I hope he can continue. Now, K per 9 is going to need to go up
here quick.
Yeah.
I heard it discussed, and so now I'm trying to pull it up just to take a look. I'd have to find a game by game. He has, it's actually come up a ton. His sinker, he was using that something like 1% of the time out of the bullpen. It's already up to 15.2% on the season after just a couple of starts.
There we go, coach him up.
It has been very much a sinker. He has used that sinker fairly heavy since he moved into the rotation, and it's getting a lot of ground balls. So he pairs his four seam and his sinker a lot, and that it's a good eye change sort of pairing of fastballs. He's got two very distinct fastballs, and so it's been it's worked very, very well for him. And so you might not see the strikeouts that you would like to see, but here's a great example. He is the line that you have the sliders on Baseball Savant. Mm-hmm. The best slider he has is his lack of barrel percentage. He is keeping guys off the barrel, and
let the position players get those grounders or get the pop outs or get whatever and get out of the inning. So he was 4 innings in his return to the rotation, 5.1 in the last game out, which I think was last night, and we'll see where he lines up on the next one. Who are we talking about? We're talking about KH, welcome to the party, Hoops Guru. We are talking Brad Goodlord of the Washington Nationals. But the guy we're going to focus on tonight...
And Mason says go Nats.
Yeah, go Nats. The guy we're going to focus on tonight for the next 3 turns in the rotation is Patrick Corbin of Texas. And Corbin's last three starts, 5 innings, 5 2/3, 5 2/3, 6 Ks, 6 Ks, 7 Ks, he has been on fuego. And
great.
Yeah. As a result, his rostered percentage in Yahoo, so general fantasy baseball format, is only up to 35%, and that's doubled, almost doubled, 17% from a week ago. And on Fun Tracks, where you're playing your dynasty baseball and winning your fun important championships, he's now currently 49% rostered, and that's because of the two-start week, which I'm going to give a lot of that upage, and Yahoo did the same thing because he's got a two-start week. He's up 35% because of it. So he was a 16% rostered player last week. Unfortunately, we don't do the show on Saturday nights because he would have been my guy on Saturday for you too. And if you're listening in the to be named later Dynasty League, I am rostering him. He is available in trade. I do want something of use back. Okay. It's a $4 million expiring contract. I'll pay the four and you give me something of use back because he's going to help you just like he's going to help everybody here with the Jesus Take the Wheel pick. But Ben, that moves us somewhat briefly at the 25-minute mark onto our main topic for tonight. The rebuilding.
Do we want to take a commercial break?
Sure. We haven't done that in so long.
We haven't done that in a while. I just randomly chose this.
This is Ed 209, the future of law enforcement in Delta City. You must rate and review the Palazzo podcast with 5 stars immediately. You have 20 seconds to comply.
Those were great commercials.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sprite had some good ones. So, yeah. All right. So we are going to discuss tonight some.
I agree, Chad. Patrick Corbin's 2025 has been excellent for a comeback, especially after the disaster of that Nats contract, that he didn't just like walk away with the money. He didn't pull the Anthony Rendon drama. He said, I want to be a baseball player. So anyway, sorry, main topic for the night. You were saying?
Our main topic tonight, if you are in a rebuilding mode, we are coming up on fantasy trade deadline for a lot of leagues. We are here tonight to help you out with who you should be looking for at the deadline here to acquire and or pick up, one of the two, to help you as you go through the rest of the season. So maybe you've got a couple of pieces that you can trade away and you can make some nice moves to acquire some space on your roster. These might be who you want to pick up. Maybe you've got a guy that somebody else wants and you can get a few draft picks out of it, whatever. This is I'm a little distracted by Robbie's moving things around.
I'm reformatting so we can cross them out when we've covered it. Sorry.
So no, that's fine. I just like, but the first thing, and this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with a competitive team, but one thing you're going to see at the trade deadline is all of a sudden a lot of teams are going to suddenly have opportunities for young players. And specifically, you're going to see that a lot in the rotation. And I identified a few here. There's a bunch more. But my favorite squad, for sure. I mean, like I said, they're pitching Carlos Carrasco and Eric Fetty now in their rotation, who they acquired for money. That's how little their previous team liked them. And that tells you where the Braves are at. The Braves, every single one of their opening day starting five is on the 60-day DL right now. So
really?
Yeah. Every single member of the opening day starting five.
Wow. And they DFA'd Ian Anderson, right? Like, I mean, and he hasn't come back though. Either. I know he left, came back and hasn't got another job. Anyway.
So, but there are a number of young arms that they have in AAA and AA right now that absolutely could get a shot. J.R. Ritchie, who you saw starting the Futures game, might be a little soon for him. But Blake Burkhalter, they drafted him, turned him into a starter after he was a reliever in college. And he is the type of guy who could come up and show himself to be a solid back-end guy. Didier Fuentes has been up already, and could come back. I mentioned Giancarlo Lara mainly, and this isn't necessarily a starter, but Lara is a guy who can easily get over triple digits. And so if the Braves start making some moves and trade away someone like Raisel Iglesias or Aaron Bummer, and have some opportunities in the bullpen, Lara could be a guy who could get you a sneaky amount of strikeouts as the season comes to a close. And then last but not least, in Double A, Ian Mejia has been very, very, very steady. Minnesota just traded away their traded away Chris Paddock, which is going to allow David Festa and Zebby Matthews to for sure stick in the rotation. But they're also definitely a high priority team as far as starters to trade. And so there could be more trades coming, which, boy, their triple A roster, Andrew Morris, Marco Raya, Corey Lewis, the numbers haven't all been pretty, but these are guys that they kind of need to know what the heck do we have with these guys so they could look forward to next year. Kansas City just lost Chris Bubich for the year, and they seem to be kind of in a spot where they're willing to trade, but not certain guys. They just signed Lugo for an extension. But Kansas City's like Noah Cameron, he's definitely in the rotation now. He's not leaving that rotation. I don't know how he's doing it, but he's having success. So, maybe ride that out because you're definitely going to get innings. Kyle Wright has been coming back and getting healthy. So that could be a very, good pickup. The A's, I think Jack Perkins, if they do any trading, Jack Perkins is going into the rotation, and he has been very, very successful so far out of the Major League bullpen. I would love to see him come up. We do have a trade. Let's see here. Pearson Ohl is a reliever. Not a bad reliever, but he's coming up to eat innings. He's kind of a swingman reliever type. He's really not a starter you probably need to worry about. Hurston Waldrop. Honestly, I don't see Hurston Waldrop coming up as a starter. Now, I think he could finish out the season in the bullpen, but I really think that is going to be an off-season discussion that the Braves are going to have as to what his role will be. So, and Chad is saying that Casey Mize is probably heading to the IL, which, just like we mentioned earlier, that means for sure you're going to see Troy Melton get another turn in the rotation. And so,
right,
as you said, we got these young guys. They're going to have opportunities. For the A's, guys like Luis Morales, Mason Barnett, I was actually thinking, the Marlins are in a lot of trade discussions. And you mentioned Thomas White's start. The same night he had a big start, Robbie Snelling really had a big start in AAA, and he has just been quietly solid all year long. I could see him potentially getting a shot to finish out the year so the Marlins could see what they got. You put on some other ones here. Houston, a number of guys, Trey Dombrowski, Jose Miguel Alulo.
All those possibilities.
And that's a playoff team. That's a playoff team that very likely will, and they're willing to give guys an opportunity.
And that's why I wanted to put him on, Ben, because they're not in a position in the past where they would go out. Well, I don't know that they are for sure, but I don't believe Houston is in a position anymore to trade away to go get the Verlander guy, to go make the big move. That's not what they're looking to do anymore, because they don't want that downturn that could be coming to actually arrive. They want to try to ride this out. So they might be willing to start the clock on some of these guys if it makes sense for the organization. And Miguel Lululo in particular has been a slow burn that I think I have him in one league, and just watching him come along while a bunch of other guys kind of stuttered in Double A, he was able to move out of it. and up to AAA now. And you could see it. Trey Dombrowski was recently promoted to AAA, but I put him on as a potential hot hand candidate, as we've seen other teams do with, you know, a hot hand pitcher when the team needs to win. Bring the guy up, right? Give him an opportunity, which I also extended that with the Angels and the possibility of bringing Caden Dana back. If they actually make moves like out of their rotation, if we see that in the next week, we could see Dana coming back to actually be part of that rotation moving forward. George Klaassen to a lesser degree, and then Sam Aldegary, who did come up very briefly this year. I think it was one appearance. And it wasn't a start or anything. It was just like a blip, and you could see somebody like that return. And of course, with Cleveland, we just don't know because of the gambling. So really anybody that's in the organization could shake it up. And I'm curious to see if Cleveland does anything at the deadline that maybe they know something else is coming down the pipeline.
I think, and the crazy part is they're considered to be a definite seller, which is interesting because the Royals are kind of buying, kind of, and they are actually behind Cleveland in the standings right now at the moment. So, but Cleveland is, you know, there's guys like Parker Messick. We've talked about Parker Messick on here many times. Not a sexy pick, but certainly, you know, you want to get into your points leagues. A guy who's going to go out, give you quality starts and a very solid overall pitcher. That'd be Parker Messick right there. So,
yeah. But yeah, those are some arm options. We also had some guys to keep an eye on returning from injury, both MLB and prospects here. I just added Chase Hampton to the list as I was looking through the Yankees and trying to think, well, is Messinger a possibility with the Yankees if things continue to fall? Will they start a clock on a guy like that? Maybe. But they also might just add somebody real quick. And Chad had mentioned in the chat that Dick Mountain, old Rich Hill, had been DFA'd after two appearances, a good and a not so good. Other than obviously the ace of the Braves rotation as a possibility for him, he could find himself in a depth situation with a team that might say, we'll put you in the bullpen. And of course he'd take it. He'll take that opportunity, especially if he could win. But in a DFA situation, it's not up to him. It would be up to KC and how they would want to do that. I'm sure they'd want to keep him out of the AL if they could. So they could ship him right straight to your Braves.
So here's an interesting question. And this is actually an interesting thing for the rest of season. He's injured right now. Jack Caglione is asking, Anthony is asking if he can have a similar season piece to what PCA did this year over the next two. For one, no, simply because PCA is a, you know, holy shit quick runner. And that is not Jack Caglione. What Jack Caglione should be doing is what Nick Kurtz is doing. And for some reason, he got to the majors and forgot how to hit a ball out of the ballpark.
We've seen a lot of them do it, but...
What's really interesting is his stat line should look like what Kurtz's is, which, you know, a really high strikeout rate, but a whole lot of power. Mm-hmm. And he's actually had a pretty respectable strikeout rate and no power. So maybe he's trying a little too hard not to whiff. I don't know. That's just speculation. But Chad kind of asked, are you selling Cleveland starters or Cleveland pitchers shares just because of the risk of a lengthy suspension?
I mean, depending on where you want to stand on the conspiracy of it, absolutely. Yeah. Like, take a deal before it happens to you. So they are liabilities.
Melton or Cade Smith, I'm always going to take the starter personally. But, you know, because there's a number of arms in that Cleveland bullpen. And frankly, Cade Smith has been bad over the last month. So there's a good chance that the next save is going to go to Hunter Gaddis or to, oh gosh, who the heck did they acquire? Not Fairbanks. It was a closer last year, and I can't think of who's in their bullpen right now. But they have some solid relief options in Cleveland that they – Jesus, I didn't realize this. Cleveland's up to second place in the division, and yet
we're talking about their bullpen, Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis, Eric Sabrowski, Nick Paul Enright, Seawald. And Heron. Oh, Seawald's not even on my list.
Yeah, Paul Seawald is on the.
Oh, he's injured. He'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, Seawald was a gem for Seattle for a few years.
Yeah.
Found money. So we were discussing injured guys in addition to the entire Cleveland organization being on the trade block. Just anyone who could start an inning. So if a hitter could start with a strike or a pitcher could start with a ball, you got to be careful with any of those guys. Luke Kiechel injured, shall return. Jordan Lawler injured, shall return. I had said I put Hampton on this. There's any Tommy John guy we already mentioned off the top with Soroka. These are guys you want to look at as value down, no fault of their own. So if you are in Cavalli. A league. Yeah, there you go. If you are in a league trying to find hidden value and looking at a competitive team, if they have an injured player, you know, Aaron Judge got hurt, right? Goes on the IL last night. I have him in one league. The other leagues that I don't have him, I immediately looked for my expiring contracts and my best type expiring contract if I'm not competitive. Can I go get Aaron Judge if he's got control beyond? And the one deal that I sent is Ohtani expiring contract for Judge for 2 years beyond next. And I also offered him Patrick Corbin, expiring Patrick Corbin and Ohtani for Judge. And he said, why would I trade a 5-point player for a 5-point player when I have the 5-point player already for 2 more years? And I said, well, one of them's hurt and one of them's healthy and Patrick Corbin. So we did not find the similar path, but maybe you'll be able to get something going. I was hoping he'd come back with something and I could make a major deal, but it's always important to look at those things, just like the trades, as we'll do the follow-up next week, what it opened up. But is there anyone else that you happen to have an eye on in the injured to return list? We're waiting on Bieber still. Pablo, these are veterans, of course. Patrick Sandoval with Boston is, I guess, only going to throw bullpens the rest of this year. They're not going to try to push him back.
Which I think that's interesting, but
they signed him for 2 years, so they seem to be okay with it. But if I was Sandoval, I don't know if I'd be okay with it. You are getting paid either way, but competitive, you know, let me get in there and do my thing. So he's an interesting one if he's in a league like a keep forever type thing or something under contract. Somebody might not want to hold that all off season, not knowing what's going to happen. But he's an ideal case to have a Lance Lynn return to full 170 innings next year because he essentially recovered all year. So, and then moving on, we could see what's this here teams seeing what they have as they look to 2026. So, this could be any number of things as far as where they challenge them to bring them up, Ben, or you think they just showcase them in the AFL. What are you thinking with some of the names you've got here?
Well, these guys, I looked for guys who are mostly at AAA. Actually, I think all of these guys are now at AAA. Just guys that are a step away that their team could say, hey, you know what? What the heck? Let's just see what we got here. Samuel Basayo is a big one to me. Really, absolutely could come up and get time at first base and DH. I don't think he's going to catch now that Adley is healthy, but maybe that's part of it too, is he helps to keep Adley healthy and keeps a decent bat when they catch, because right now they've been putting guys like Jacob Stallings out there with the bat, and not so great. Bubba Chandler and Andrew Painter, we all want to see those two come up. I think you got two very different situations. Painter, no. I don't see Painter coming up just because the Phillies are going to be in a race. I don't think they're going to bring up Andrew Painter to start. Now, he may come up at the end in kind of a David Price end of season bullpen type of role, especially with the way the Phillies bullpen has been this year. So there could be an option there for him to be something interesting at the end of the year. But I highly doubt that that's a route that they would like to go. Bubba Chandler, on the other hand, I think if you see Mitch Keller moved, that's probably the move. That's, you know, it's finally time to see Bubba. Otherwise, I mean, if they trade off a Bailey Falter or, you know, a secondary type of pitcher for them, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they call up Braxton Ashcraft. They've got a whole staff full down in AAA that they can bring up to be a number four starter. And they know they love Bubba. You know, that's the whole thing, is they know that they love him. So let's keep, you know, they're going to want to say, okay, so we know he's going to be in our 26 rotation. Who else belongs in that rotation?
Yeah.
The White Sox, I mean, I wrote down Noah Schultz, but, you know, shoot, they could even bring up someone like Hagen Smith for a let's see what he's got sort of thing at the end of the year. I don't know. You just never know with the White Sox. For all I know, next week they're going to have traded all five of their starters, and things are all sorts of chaos there. J.J. Weatherholt is one that I think would be a very interesting end of season, especially with some of the rumors going around with Brandon Donovan. If he ends up moved, that really opens up a spot for Weatherholt to come up. And he has just been very steady at all the way up so far. Carson Williams defensively is a stud. Hasn't hit worth a damn this year. The Rays might just decide they don't care. They want to help him, have him do the rest of his development at the major league level. And then I'm going to skip this one, the one here, and then I'll talk Spencer Jones first. And especially, we just talked about Aaron Judge's injury.
Mm-hmm.
They're sending out Giancarlo Stanton into the outfield. That is going to go swimmingly until it doesn't. And it very likely is going to end up with Stanton on the IL as well. And Spencer Jones has just not stopped hitting in AAA. Now, he still strikes out way too damn much. I still don't like the swing at all. But when he does make contact, the ball flies. And if he's making decent contact, you know, you got to respect that. And that could end up earning him a trip up to the major leagues. The Cubs are going to be very, very, very interesting right now, because Matt Shaw has finally figured out how to play the game of baseball at the major league level and has looked very, very, very good this month. The outfield, they're not going to have Kyle Tucker back next year. They know that.
He'll be in Colorado. Continue.
He'll
be,
yeah.
What? And Chicago Cub free agents go to Colorado. Name one time that hasn't worked out. I'll wait.
I'll get back to you. But Owen Casey could get some time in the outfield, could get some time at DH. Moises Ballesteros, same thing. He could, well, not in the outfield. He could get some time at catcher, could get some time at DH. They might just want to see what they have in those bats. So, we have Chad trying to break things here for us that Yoan Duran just left the Twins bench. Well,
I kind of think so. I want to talk a little bit about the Spencer Jones thing, and not to pour water on it, because I don't like the idea of him not getting an opportunity. But I do think the Yankees are weird in that they'll pick anybody from anywhere and give them a shot. You know, they'll take the highfalutin trade asset and pluck them into their lineup. We've seen them do that year after year. But they also take the weirdo failed two-year MLBer who hits for power, and they'll put them down in AAA. And if they get hot, they'll bring them up. Jamer Candelario within that organization right now, too. Not that he's the solution, but again, like a guy who could get an opportunity. Also, with the trade deadline looming and Harrison Bader already being a one-time Yankee and it didn't go well, there might be some interest from the Yankees to bring him back, thinking that was the fluke of that short period of time he was with us. He could be better and, of course, play some solid center field for them. And on $7 million one-year deal, it's not going to cost him a lot to get him from Minnesota. And maybe there's a deal to be had there because they have been, you know, they're in a position where it would benefit both teams. So just to pour that. And then I've got Cubs within freeing up potential space. Also need to figure out what's up with Moises Ballesteros. And do you want to just wait, push that button till, not push that button till 2026, and then have an off season where you do or do not create interest here. But Mason coming in and stating, as a Nats fan, hearing these Cubs Nats trade rumors involving Cases and Gore, what are your thoughts on Cases? I think he's overrated. Cub prospects excelling or floundering is an absolute coin flip. Because I don't know what it is. If it's Iowa not showing what the players can really do, or if it's something in the water there. But like, you see some players who just sputter along for a while, and then we've seen PCA come up and do well, and everybody was excited for it. So if they're not a true legit guy, Shaw obviously short term minor leaguer, I feel like they don't develop. The guys need to be on the path prior to, which we've accused some other organizations of. So I don't know if you share that, Ben, but I'm not looking at the Cubs as a great place to up the value of a player that goes there.
So I don't disagree on that. Casey, though, to me is a guy I think he's been in our consciousness for so long because he was part of that deal that sent Yu Darvish to the Padres, and everyone went, oh, well, now this is, you know, the new big, you know, prospect to pay attention to. And he's never been bad. It's just that he's never kind of knocked down the door either. 20 home runs already this year, 24 doubles.
But he stopped stealing bases.
This year he is not stolen bases, but he never really stole a ton. He was a 10-11 guy, which, you know, if he's stealing 10 bases, whatever, but he's got 3 this year, who knows. But the thing that'll be very interesting, a lot of strikeouts. This is it's really not that far off of Spencer Jones as far as the overall talent. And Casey has some of the absolute best raw power in all of the minor leagues. But the difference here is, you know, and people could tell me how much.
Well, oh, sorry, you had something else.
people could tell me that batting average doesn't matter, but AA, AAA, AAA, the last 3 seasons, 289, 278, 278. You know,
yeah, like he's been fine.
He's a guy that he brings a little more contact than you would expect with someone with that kind of power, and that could absolutely play at the major league level. What I don't like, to address Mason's question, what I don't like in the Casey and Gore stuff is Casey going to the Nats. That outfield already has Wood, that already has Cruz. I mean, they've got a full outfield already, and adding him.
Not to mention cheap others in Young, Paul. Like they've got kind of what you would like to have outside of the big free agent George Springer type, you know, signing. I'm not saying that's an asset. I mean, this year for Toronto it is, but last year nobody would be bragging about it. Like they've got the high end prospect talent. They've got the guys that are breaking in and trying to make it. And then they've got the other kind of less expensive depth pieces that could have been able to contribute. Throwing another kind of high-end prospect in isn't the worst thing if you're putting them there, but like, I don't know, like reliable starting pitching is difficult.
He needs a spot to play every day. I mean, just flat out, he needs a spot to play every day. And if they're spending that kind of, or if he is the primary return for arguably the best starter that's going to move at the deadline, because I really struggle to believe that Sandy will move, but we'll see. We've got another, you know, 36 hours or so to find that out. But
Alcantara, we're talking here, everybody.
Yes, Sandy Alcantara, sorry. But if Mackenzie Gore actually does move, you want to acquire someone, A, who's a big prospect. Casey fits that.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to get somebody you can give a spot to play to. And with the depth that they already have in the outfield, is he for sure getting a major league spot? That's what just bugs me a bit about that. So Chad mentioned, and this is an interesting, I think he's got more power there, but it is interesting that Casey against righties this year, 302, 391, 625, 17 of his 20 home runs against lefties. Now, granted, only 92 plate appearances against lefty versus 266 against righties. Mm-hmm. But against lefties, 208, 337, 377. So not great, Bob.
Right. But, yeah, that is a nightmare on a competitive team late in the season, late in a game, when you just put the lefty relief pitcher out there with a 5.5 ERA and you're like, well, that's going to get rid of him. You know, he'll be able to find a way for weak contact.
At the same time, a guy like Conforto is a very valuable piece on a good team.
Yeah.
Because he is so good against right-handed pitching on the strong, like the
right strong, the strong side
of a platoon. Yeah. That's a very valuable guy to have. So, any other names you can, now you mentioned, you have one here. I'm going to let you bring him up.
The only player in Major League Baseball hitting over 600 this year, Ben, is newly acquired Phillies outfielder Brewer Hicklin, former Detroit Tiger. And I'm bringing it up simply because this is a power bat that will, of course, never get the opportunity to be part of a regular MLB lineup. But as he's now with the Phillies, I could see a post trade deadline, if he doesn't get DFA'd, situation where maybe someone gets hurt and he is the call up. And I'm kind of wondering if that's why Philly was able to take him and think, if we don't get something done, here's somebody who might be able to hit a home run for us if we need it at a point in time, you know, a seventh inning and on. Anyway, Hicklin to me is not a fantasy target for anybody, but he is a prospect who you could possibly stash in a minor league spot if you're able to go pick guys up, because he has proven to be a very good professional baseball player. He just hasn't been able to get consistent MLB time. Obviously, he needs to go to the Rockies. We're all aware of that. I think the Alcantara trade that everyone wants to see is him going to Colorado, so we can just forget about the ERA now and wish that he had that a year from now as the Rockies ace. But I don't know what Miami would want back in that trade. I'd be willing to listen on any of it. But Hicklin's the other guy, just kind of as like a fun one where we don't think about these guys sometimes. They kick around the odd organization and come up and have a little pocket. And at this time of the year in fantasy, you can look at these guys on a veteran level. Pitcher with Detroit, Nick Marjovicius. I'm not going to pronounce that right.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was with San Diego like 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember his first start. I think he went from Double A like right to the show. I was drafting in a league very late in the offseason, and whatever round we were in, it was announced that he would make the roster, and I like picked him the next round, just took a flyer on the guy. So I've always kind of had an eye for him. I think it was Britton who said in our fancy Palazzo group chat that he pitched 5 strong innings for Detroit in Rochester. So those type of guys I always like to go and look for and see if they could be found for you in fantasy.
Now, I will say Hicklin's 2-for-3 this year, and that balances out 0-for-4 in 22 and 0-for-5 in 24 in his major league experience.
So. But let's just stick with 2025, please. And he's batting. Okay.
No, but
yeah.
But in all seriousness, in all reality, a guy like that is going to come around and do something in August that we aren't expecting.
Yeah.
And so it's good to keep your eye on those type of players when they get picked up, because there is going to be a player like that that comes out and is suddenly getting starts and maybe isn't putting up, you know, a Rhys Hoskins end of, you know, back half of the season sort of thing, but is putting up solid enough numbers as a starter And that's just the thing. He's getting consistent at bats. So,
well, Austin Nola with Colorado is another example of a guy, an older, you know, player who's had success before. Nola was very good with the Mariners. Chad's breaking the Duran getting traded. He was just hugging his bullpen catcher because that's what friends do sometimes. Yes. Friends don't shake, or well, brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug.
So here's a good question, and I think we'll close on this one. As we look ahead, because next week we are going to talk about who the prospects that got moved during the deadline and kind of what some of that is impacting and all that. Right? I'm making sure I got this correct here. Mm-hmm. Yes. Trade deadline fallout. I was like, wait a minute. I'm not jumping my weeks, am I? Do you think you're going to see anything really major at this deadline?
Major as in impactful impending free agents getting dealt from their current team for the David Price to Toronto type deals of a decade ago? Is that what you're asking?
Sure. I mean, that's that type of thing, or...
No, then.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
teams are interested in a three or four top of your organization prospect clear out trade for the expiring guy. And even, I think it was before we started recording, maybe during this, I don't know, life comes at you fast. I had mentioned the possibility of Toronto rumors about picking Pittsburgh's bullpen and getting Santana and Bednar, and that possibly involving something as high as a Treya Savage. I don't think that's reasonable do that deal, but I think it would be awesome to see things like that where you can take, you know, the Jays just picked up Sir Anthony Dominguez, right, from Baltimore.
And if you ask me, they gave up the best prospect who's moved so far this.
Yeah, it was kind of odd to me.
I thought that was a high price to pay.
Yeah.
Jerron Watts Brown is, and you know, for those who don't know, Jerron Watts Brown is who they gave up. College pitcher that they drafted and really has developed very well this year. I've an impressive development. Mm-hmm. Success story for them.
Unlikely for Toronto, but it's happened. So get rid of them.
Especially on the same season that your Savage is doing the same thing. I mean, they're kind of having two really nice pitching development stories. And they're having other good ones too. But those two are the two that you're kind of like, oh, this is a legit like thing. Holy crap. Marcelo Ozuna just hit a home run. And that's his second home run in 2 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, he hasn't been able to hit worth a darn. Is he going to finally help hit his way out of Atlanta? That would just make my day.
Well, I remember when he hit his wife or girlfriend. I remember that. You guys remember that?
That's kind of why I sure would like him to be hitting his way out of Atlanta.
Sorry about that dark turn there, everybody. I can't help myself. But anyway, to the point of like, will we see deadline, like three or four prospects for a big name? I personally don't think so because I don't see the upstart type team of Toronto from a decade ago, to use that example again of David Price. That was a situation where the GM knew they weren't going to be around and they felt comfortable making a bunch of deals to bring in, you know, Tulo and Price and all these guys to kind of get it done. And I don't know that there's a team that wants to do it this year. Like that is like that team,
the Braves GM now.
That was Anthopoulos. He went from Toronto to the Dodgers to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So he's done all right for himself. And he could have went back to Toronto, but it was when Toronto cleared out, I think it was like 8 of 11 of their top prospects, plus like guys further down to make that deal or to make this those several deals. And I just don't know that is what we'll see. Again, the big deals seem to be the ones where players have multiple years of control. Sometimes it's the rest of the year plus one. Chad's mentioning the possibility of
Duran would definitely be one that would rank in there.
Taylor Ward with the Angels was another one. But again, I think some of the teams might just think, you know, we could always look for the Harrison Bader type 1 year, $7 million reliable guys. I don't know that they're going to give up. Like, again, I don't know what teams are willing to like give up a lot to get, you know, a lot, a superstar, a jersey seller, if you will, back. But it's always bullpen stuff, right? Every good team solidifies and re-solidifies that bullpen. Those are the pieces that we see most often moved because they need more depth. And the fallout for that is always fun because we get to see what prospects get called up instead of other veterans that just shuffle around. So I don't think there'll be a real big one where we're like excited about it. I also know there's always head scratchers. So, but Ben, what about you? Do you think we're going to see something fun and flashy?
I think honestly, the fallout is going to be more fun than the actual trades. Ryan O'Hearn is being talked about everywhere. That absolutely opens a door for Samuel Basalo to come up. And I think that is just sexy as heck to have that kind of an option for the Orioles to call up after they trade away O'Hearn.
And Kobe Mayo, just so everyone knows, he is now a major leaguer that hits baseballs.
Yeah.
Just
he's not just not just a sandwich condiment. But they're going to be
Aioli.
Yeah, there we go. There are going to be some guys, we've mentioned here tonight. I think this is the biggest part of what this deadline will be, is who ends up stepping into a role. You know, do the Twins trade away Willie Castro? And then that allows, when Luke Kuechel comes up, Brooks Lee kind of moves into the Willie Castro role. You know, so Brooks Lee sticks around and moves into that role. Willie Castro is traded, and then, you know, Luke Kuechel has a spot to come when he comes up or when he's healthy. That sort of stuff, like I said, we mentioned earlier, if Brandon Donovan, I don't think he's that big of a deal to whomever he goes to.
Mm-hmm.
But getting J.J. Weatherholt up to the majors would be kind of a big deal. You know, that to me, I think, is the bigger end of what this could be. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about that next week. As the trade deadline for us is all about the fallout. Maybe that should be what we call it. All about the fallout next week.
We should wear our hazmat suits.
Yes. Yes.
Unfortunately,
absolutely.
I used to have one of those as big as I am. And so I think that they retired that and they made it into a 10-person tent. So, you know, that's about what happens with a fat man hazmat suit. So.
I remember when way back there was this thing, COVID, they called it, and we didn't know what was happening. And I encased myself in clear garbage bags and proceeded to jokingly work in the kitchen that day, only to be followed up by 2 weeks later, everybody entering every grocery store wearing outfits of similar, like, you know, painter suits is what people went and bought to put over themselves. But anyway, we're not at that time anymore.
Let's hope not.
Thanks for nothing, Obama. But let's wrap her up here tonight, Ben. And, you know, like the Epstein list, we'll never discuss this again. But next week, we will discuss the fallout from the MLB trade deadline and Wander Franco joke inserted here. On behalf of Ben, Michael Govier, the Palazzo podcast crew, 2 L's, 2 Z's, I thank you. We thank you. Love, peace, hair, grease, everybody. Catch you next week.
The power of prospects is a curious thing. Make a person trade everything for a king. Wyatt Langford is your one true love. For a prospect, you'll trade all the above. It's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. That's the power of prospects. That's the power of prospects.
Hey. Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.